I think they like you, Steve.
Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Have no place to go.
6:11 on a very historic day in America. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And here on Michigan Avenue, well, it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. The rest of the week looks pretty sweet. But on this day, you have the 50th anniversary of the murder of Robert F. Kennedy and the 74th anniversary of D-Day. We'll talk about both. I just heard an interesting thing when I was coming in. On the 10th anniversary of D-Day, it would have been 1954, President Eisenhower, the man who commanded our Allied forces, who ordered Operation Overlord, the hero of D-Day, went to Camp David. And he stayed at Camp David. People said, shouldn't there be some sort of celebration around you? It's not about me. It's about the people that lost their lives, the people that paid the ultimate sacrifice. That's an example that would be nice to see going forward. That's an example the rest of us should
no doubt
should hope for. Mm-hmm. So at 6:13, we'll get to the top six. I just need to check. And we need to do a well-being check. I know Grzanich looks comfortable, doesn't he? When you look, Dave, up at the monitors, you see our new facility at 303's Wacker. Grzanich looks perfectly comfortable. Looks like he's riding in a Rolls Royce. He just looks kicked back. He looks comfortable. You are comfortable, aren't you, Steve?
It's exhausting. I have to stand over here.
I know. You are standing.
It's a standing position now.
But you're comfortable.
Yes. Yes. It's beautiful here. You're going to love it.
On the other hand, Mary Vandeveld is having her eyeballs seared out by the sun. And has now had to put on sunglasses because her position in Traffic Central stares directly into the rising sun over Lake Michigan.
And isn't that just a terrible shame?
And they've tried to put up some cardboard here to block out some of the sun, too.
The blinds are not up yet in this particular window.
Right.
So they're up in all the other windows, but not the one that I need them up in. So here's Adam Phillips hanging a cardboard box now. And
he's very good at...
Which is wonderful.
That kind of ingenuity.
Yeah.
I've seen him in action many times. Do you have sunscreen on, Mary? I hope.
I didn't realize I'd need to bring it. I didn't come prepared for sunscreen.
Well, it's a good thing you had your sunglasses.
Mary, are you sure you just didn't have a rough night last night? Because it's kind of...
She does have the bloodshot eye look, doesn't she?
Just sort of like, I'm going to hide my eyes now.
Well, actually, if you tilt left and right and start singing, Isn't She Lovely, I think we'd have something. it's 6:14. Let's do the top six and six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Men.
Item number one, the S&P Global Ratings not so wild about the new Illinois budget. Despite claims by both parties that the new spending plan is balanced, the ratings agency says it relies on hundreds of millions of dollars that may never materialize. It's basically shuffling paper. And $300 million for the long-stalled sale of the Thompson Center and $445 million from new buyouts to be offered to state pensioners. The bottom line is we don't know what we don't know. And what we don't know is, will that money ever materialize? Other than that, home run. Quack!
Quack!
President tweets, the Russian witch hunt continues. The Russian witch hunt hoax continues, all because Jeff Sessions didn't tell me he was going to recuse himself. All right. I want you really to focus with me here. Let's all focus together and let's review.
Okay.
Jeff Sessions was the first United States senator to back Donald Trump. He was a devoted Trumper all through the campaign. His reward, if you want to call it that, was to be named attorney general. When he was named the attorney general appointee to eventually be approved by the Senate committee, the Russian investigation was not on, was not full tilt. He had not testified, and he had not had any reason to recuse himself. So how could he have recused himself or told the president he would recuse himself prior to any of the events that led to his recusal actually happening? Mr. Peabody, we're going to need a way back machine.
Well, he could have known about them, right? I mean, that's one answer, one possible
answer. What do you mean, how could he have known about them?
Well, if, again, just assuming that there is some fire here to where the smoke is coming, and there was some corrupt activity going on, he could have known about it.
He's not even admitting corrupt activity. Sessions, if you believe him...
Well, Trump, that is.
Yeah, Trump could not have appointed Sessions.
Right.
If Trump knew all of this, well, Trump should have recused himself.
Yeah.
So Sessions couldn't tell Donald Trump, I'm going to recuse myself, because he had no intention to do it, because he didn't think any of this jam would occur to him. Oh, it's tiring. Next, Gavin Newsom, the Democratic Lieutenant Governor of California and former mayor of San Francisco, captured one of the two top spots in the top two take all California electoral system. Gavin Newsom will be on the November ballot for governor. It's a bipartisan primary that just happened yesterday. He's going to face John Cox. John Cox, a Republican businessman backed by President Trump in a state that Mr. Trump lost by nearly 4 million votes in 2016. The expectation here is that Gavin Newsom will be the next governor of California, barring major scandals or something else that happens between now and then. I assume, like me, you've all gotten out of the political prediction business since 2016.
Yes.
But Gavin Newsom will be your heavy favorite. Next. Rush Hospital is going to get $45 million, its largest single donation ever to help veterans with PTSD. Steve, do we know who made that donation, or was it an anonymous thing?
I do not know who made that donation. I can find
out. Will you get your top people on it?
I will. I will look immediately.
Okay. And Mayor Emanuel apologizing and taking responsibility for the CPS sex abuse scandal that made the cover of the Chicago Tribune yesterday. That reporting continues, and we will get into it to some degree a little bit later on in the program. And sad story, designer Kate Spade at the age of 55 hung herself with scarves yesterday in her apartment. Rumors abound now as to why. Her sister said she'd suffered from depression for years. Supposedly her husband had either left a note or given her some reason to believe their marriage was over. Heartbreaking note left behind to her 13-year-old daughter. Telling her it's not her fault, and ask daddy, amongst other things. To say a prayer for the family. And all I can do is just tell you, and you know this, depression doesn't care how rich you are. Depression doesn't care how successful you are. Depression affects everybody. And if this turns out to be what we think we know about this case, it's just very sad that she didn't feel there were other options other than this. That is your top six at six.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
What's coming up at 6:30?
We are going to have the top stories of the morning. Vic Vaughn will be taking my place here at the anchor desk, so stay tuned for
You're
that.
You're going to get on top of this investigative work.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I started doing, and forgot to give my place here to Vic. So,
But again, we're going to have the top stories of the morning coming up at 6:30.
Yes.
Right.
Right here.
I'm looking forward to those.
Okay,
what about the traffic there? Well, once sight him, once you can't see anymore is my
I
point.
I can see it now, the cardboard box.
Oh, the cardboard's working.
Yes.
Nice job. Job, engineer Adam.
Squint. Good okay. job.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared and our boots ain't muddy, but no one laughs. Cause there ain't nothing funny when a soldier cries. And I just wipe my eyes. I fold it up and put it in my shirt.
Long before there was an internet, long before there was Saving Private Ryan, the movie, long before most of us were born, there was D-Day, 74 years ago today. And there's no way to understand what it felt like to live on that day as an adult or somebody that was actually serving America and risking their lives. Today, right now, Honor Flight Chicago preparing to take 101 veterans to honor D-Day. John Patak is the president of Honor Flight Chicago, who joins me now. Before we say hi to an actual walking, talking World War II hero, we'll get to Bud in just a second. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
Tell me about Honor Flight, and let's pretend I don't know, because you know what a fan I am.
Sure, sure. So this is our 11th season flying our senior war heroes to Washington, D.C. for a day of honor, thanks, and remembrance. This is our 85th flight. Today we will have crossed over the 7,700th vet that we've taken to D.C. with us.
It's an amazing statistic. 7,700 vets being able to get to D.C., no cost whatsoever, and see the memorials built for them, share stories with those who served the wars that they served in. It's really cool.
Absolutely, and it's so much more than that. These guys get to sit around and tell stories. We have well-wishers along the way, shaking hands, saying thank you. And it's really just a wonderful day to pay tribute to our senior war heroes and our current active duty military as well.
101 vets in total on the flight. Got a couple of World War II veterans in particular. One you'll meet in a second, and also Ben Cobit of Mokina, 99 Korean War vets. Two of the Korean War veterans also served in Vietnam. The average age of those Korean vets, I think, is 86. And a major general from the Korean War on the flight as well. We want you to let Honor Flight Chicago know if you got a vet in your life you love and you love them to have this experience. They can handle all the medical considerations that may be involved, and they can certainly ease your tensions about whether or not your vet will be taken care of, because there's nobody better than this. And John, Mary Pattinato, and you guys, you should be very proud of what you do.
Yeah, we're really excited. Today's the 74th anniversary of D-Day, as you mentioned, and it's sure to be an amazing day in D.C. and a very active and lively day. And we certainly are prepared and ready to have a great day.
All you need to do is let Honor Flight Chicago know about your vet. They'll answer all your questions. You can take it from there. And when you hear mom or dad go, there's a catch. There's got to be a catch. Sounds too good to be true. There's no catch. There's no hitch.
There's no catch, Dave.
There's no catch. There's no hitch. There's no that's how they get you. All they want to do is provide you with an amazing day as a small way of saying thank you for all you've done.
This day is completely free for our cost-free for our heroes, and there's plenty of surprises along the way, and we are prepared to handle those who might not think they're able to take this day because they don't get around as well anymore. We once had a vet tell us, paid us a great compliment. If you can't see, don't worry. If you can't hear, don't worry. If you can't walk, don't worry. Honor Flight Chicago will take care of you. And we want to make sure that all of our veterans, our heroes, feel that way on their special day.
John, thank you for the work you're doing. It's honorflightchicago.org. And hold the line if you would. Let me go to this fine, upstanding gentleman. Can I call you Bud?
Yes.
Bud Izbicki, 92-year-old Marine from Libertyville?
Yes, that's right.
Tell me where you served.
I served with the Marine Corps since 1942. I was in for 7 years. I went to Tara, Saipan, Sindian, Okinawa, Iwo, and then Japan.
My father was an Army cook who ended up on Tinian and Saipan with a pistol patrol going around trying to find Japanese soldiers who didn't know the war was over.
They still don't. they're hiding in the cave. Yes.
Well, listen, Bud, it's an honor to meet you. What rank did you retire at?
Well, I retired at corporal.
And
I was up higher, but I got busted a couple of times.
I understand. And if my math is correct, you were born in 1926?
24.
Oh, 24. Okay, check my math. So what age did you go in?
I went in when I was 17.
17 years old.
Yeah, right. I got tied up at school, and I got disgusted. So I went down to the Marine Corps, signed up, and the guy said, I passed everything, and he said, you got to get your mother and dad's signature. So I went home. I didn't tell him. I got those papers, and I wrote down everything. and I left that night.
Unbelievable. How scared were you?
No, I wasn't scared. I was only 17. At that time, you're not scared.
Right. You're excited. You don't even know what you're getting into. You just know you're doing the right thing.
That's right. You're helping the country.
So you spent the majority of your service prior to Tinian in Saipan where?
Saipan, Tinian, Okinawa, mostly. And then I went to Japan. After that, we were blowing up Japanese warfare. Anything that blew up.
Sure, I understand.
And that was blown out of the cave.
Wow.
I was a short winded. I didn't have no bones broken or anything.
What are you made of? Is Bicky rubber? How'd you pull that off?
I don't know. I tested no bones broken. I was just short winded.
Well, God bless you, man, and thank you for the amazing service you've given this country. What'd you do with the rest of your life up to this point? What was your job when you came home?
When I came home, I became a meat cutter.
Is that right? A butcher?
Yes, sir.
And
I worked for a couple places, and I worked for a friend of mine, Patrick's Meat Market, and then he taught me everything, and he went back to Denmark, and I bought him out, and I had my store. I was a butcher for 49 years.
How about that? And I bet you were a good one. What about a wife?
My wife was, I got married to her when she was 18 years old, right after high school.
So
she passed away. She had lupus.
And I'm sorry to hear that. Obviously, kids?
Two girls.
And a couple of grandkids, I'm guessing?
No
grandkids. Well, how about that? Well, listen, I couldn't be more honored to meet you. And do you remember what you were thinking when you heard about D-Day? Yeah, because you were there in the Pacific Theater.
Yes. I was in the Pacific, but I worried about not getting hurt.
Sure. No, I understand that. And then you found out that Hitler was done, and then you guys had to finish off the empire.
That's right. We had to finish off.
Well,
we did all right.
Yes, you did. You did okay. That's a good summation of how you did. Listen, my friend, it's an honor to meet you. I'd love to get a chance to shake your hand someday. But
thank you.
God bless you and enjoy this day.
Okay. You're welcome.
There you go. How about that? Oh, by the way, Dave, you got blown out of a cave.
Yeah, and he kind of just tossed that in there.
Oh, yeah, one day I got blown out of a cave.
Blown out of the cave. 17 years old.
Now, sons or daughters, right? But in that era, it was men. You know, women did a lot in World War II, a lot.
Yes.
We don't win the war without women. But women weren't put in that position to have to go to the front lines at that point. And you think about your 17-year-old son and my 17-year-old son. I'm not saying they wouldn't have done it or couldn't have done it, mm-hmm. but it's impossible to imagine.
I can't envision it. I really can't. And it's nothing against them.
No, of course
not. It's just, it's so different. And I mean, I'm glad that I didn't have to tell my 17-year-old son goodbye because you're going off to fight a war.
Well, can you imagine he comes home and says, Dad, I need you to sign this. I want to go help the country.
Yeah.
And you know, we grew up in a different time in the 60s and 70s. In 17, it's 1978 when I'm 17. You know, I would have served this country if I had been asked at that point, but I would have been scared, unlike my friend Bud Izbicki.
Oh, and there was plenty of, when I was growing up, I mean, Vietnam was going full force.
Sure.
And you didn't know if you were going to end up going.
I'm telling you, that's why they're called the greatest generation.
Yeah,
they had no choice. Yes. They had to go.
Amazing. Where'd your dad serve, Mayor?
He did, in the Air Corps.
Army Air Corps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where did he do most of his time?
Mostly the Pacific.
Okay.
And he, you know, that was 5 years ago I did honor flight with him already.
It's so amazing. You know
it
that.
It was unbelievable. What a great day.
And by the way, I don't know if Bud knows this, but on the way back, the reception they get at Midway when they come home tonight is amazing.
Oh, you're exhausted. So. But boy, I've never seen more guys come to life. And then they did.
You see just the years reception. Fall off these guys.
Yeah.
They stand up straight.
Years old again.
Oh, it's amazing.
They're
it's
like,
amazing.
I don't need the wheelchair. I'm walking. I'm like, okay.
By the way, we're proud to have a veteran on this show, and he's going to do the headlines in just a second. Vic, remind people where you served.
Oh, I served also in Okinawa, where that last veteran that you were speaking with served. Korea.
Corporal Izbicki, is that who we're speaking of?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I missed his name. South Korea, and then also around what they call the U.S. Southern Command, when I did counter drug interdiction and terrorism surveillance, that was around the Colombia, Ecuador, Venezuela, those type places.
Yeah, the cartels and things?
Right.
Yeah. How are you not bored stiff at this place?
Are you kidding? I'm just happy to not have to look over my shoulder anymore, other than with Grzanich up here.
Yeah, well, that's true. He is as dangerous as
right.
a cartel. Thank you for your service as well, Vic. This is D-Day's 74th anniversary. And for all listening and for all who have relatives they love who went through that era in any way, shape, or form, we thank you as well. We're going to take a break, come back, get those headlines next. And Karen Conti will join us in a few, too, on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
It is 6:47, and Karen Conti joins us. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Steve.
And you'll be on the radio Sunday night?
Sunday night from 7 to 9.
All right. Let's jump in at least with what the menu is, and then we'll make sure we hit all of these various items. This is a day that's kind of filled with legal news or reactions of the same. The Supreme Court opinion on encouraging businesses to think they can use religion in some cases to discriminate. That I want to talk to you about. I also want to talk to you about, you know, the extensions of the wedding cake ruling, where this goes from here. The judge ruling that Trump's got to sit for a deposition of the defamation lawsuit with a former contestant from The Apprentice. And that's just part of the list. Are you ready to handle all that, counselor?
I am so ready.
Okay. Now tell people how they can get a hold of you.
You can get a hold of me by calling me at 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com.
All right, stand by, Karen. We'll come back with all that in a second. I want to do a little catch-up here. We got a bunch of texters chiming in on the Honor Flight guest, as you would guess. There's a great Honor Flight Milwaukee documentary that people are saying I should alert you guys to. So just Google Honor Flight Milwaukee documentary, and I'm sure you will find it. Texter Gene writes to welcome him home after his day, one of the best nights of my life. Let's see, 847, thank you for doing this segment. My dad was a World War II vet, born in 1924, stationed in Hawaii, also in Japan, written to witness the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1997. I would have loved to have had an honor flight with him. What a great organization. And Mary, I often think about you being able, Mary Vandeveld, often think about you being able to take your dad or be with your dad on that honor flight, because I missed that chance with my own father.
Yeah, it was just an amazing day. I can't even put into words how it made him smile. And
Yeah, and did he give you in the lead up to that any of that, wait a minute, there's got to be a catch? Because that's the one thing I hear more than anything else from World War II and now Korean vets who just can't figure out why anybody would fly them free to Washington.
Yeah, he kind of thought there was, but, you know, I had so much great feedback from Mary Petitano, and I knew there was nothing, and I knew there were those surprises, because we had been doing a few things to surprise him. I won't say that on the air, what those surprises are, but, he did not fight going. He wanted to go.
Well, that's great.
Really bad.
That's great. 847, my son signed up at 17 for the Army, forged my signature on the paperwork. Within 6 months, he was in Iraq. So that tells you something about some members of the current generation are ready to rock. 317, perspective, humbling. Appreciate what you did with Honor Flight this morning. 630, war is awful on both sides. My father is German, was drafted by the German Army at 16 towards the end of the war. I was grateful that D-Day happened. It probably saved his life. 312, was able to take my World War II father on an Honor Flight 7 years ago. And have always wanted to receive the vets back. Do you know when the flight will return? We can find that out. I don't know the exact return time. They do vary by about an hour, but it is at midway tonight. We can find that out.
Yeah, I think it's usually like 9 or 10. I know ours was delayed because we had some weather issues coming in from Washington. But I believe that's when it usually
They're
is.
Not bringing it back later than 10, I'm sure. I always thought the window was between 8 and 10 o'clock.
Maybe we just got back really late when I know when we went. But man, we had a major flooding and it was a bad night. But that's totally unusual.
An 847, my dad and father-in-law both did honor flight. It was amazing. 847, I was fortunate to join my dad on the 50th trip of honor flight. He was born in 1921. On D-Day, he was in England waiting to cross the channel. Honor flight, unbelievable, very moving. My father's reaction, something I'll never forget, and it goes on and on. Anyway, thank you, Texas, 312-981-7200, The Law, and Karen Conti, when we return.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Don't miss Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees live June 14th at Copernicus Center. And the Monkees present the Mike and Mickey Show. This special show will feature songs from the Monkees' entire career and will highlight many of Mike's compositions, including some that will be performed live for the first time. Tickets for the Monkees present the Mike and Mickey Show June 14th at Copernicus Center in Chicago are on sale now at Ticketfly.com.
We have Monkees tickets we're going to give away later with our second edition of Monkey True or False.
More monkey facts?
More monkey fun facts. These are questions about actual monkeys. Not the band.
Pretty well on those yesterday.
Yeah, so that's coming up. I know you're waiting at the edge of your seat. Don't fall off.
You can't miss this.
All right. Well, can I just take it back here? Jump right in. Karen Conti is with us. And Karen Conti, of course, is on Sunday nights on 720 WGN. All right. So the president has to sit for a deposition because of the Summer Zervos case. Is that right?
Yeah, he does. Bill Clinton had to do it. He has to do it. And, it's a distraction to the president, but that's the law.
That's a civil suit. Does this at all affect the Mueller investigation and Mueller's interest in talking to Trump?
I don't see any connection whatsoever. This is going to be about a defamation case. He's alleged that he defamed this former apprentice contestant. And really, it's a very narrow issue of what he said and what was the truth. And the only problem with this is that, as we know, remember Bill Clinton was impeached for lying in a deposition in that Paula Jones case, which was a civil case relating to issues that happened before the presidency. So if someone's out to impeach him and he, for some reason, sworn under oath, tells a lie, that's a significant lie, that's a material fact, he could be impeached for that. But again, that's more of a political issue than anything else.
I don't know why you think Trump would lie about anything. I mean, that seems really outlandish by you.
I'm just going out on a limb.
You're just saying, like, in a sort of speculative fashion, if that were to ever happen.
Exactly.
Wedding cakes and the Supreme Court. Give me the background.
Okay, this is bothering me because this decision came out and everyone is saying, oh, great, now people can use their religious beliefs to discriminate. That's not what this decision says. Sometimes the Supreme Court makes a ruling that has what we call precedential value, which means it can serve as a significant ruling for a mandate in other cases. This is not such a case. This was a very narrow ruling. The judges there said that the commission that was deciding this on the lower court was hostile to religion, and that was wrong. You can't be hostile to a person's religious beliefs. But the court went on to say very clearly that you cannot use religious beliefs and call that First Amendment in order to basically discriminate against people. So if this very same baker was asked to bake another cake and he refused and the commission did it the right way, I firmly believe the U.S. Supreme Court would say he violated the law. So this is a good case for non-discrimination. It's not a case that says that religious beliefs trump the idea that you can't discriminate against people.
All right. I'm confused, though, because, I didn't go to law school and I'm not that bright, as you know. So what's the difference? And how is this not just a business saying my religion says one thing, you're gay, I don't believe in it, therefore you can't have a cake?
It doesn't say that, because the basis of the ruling was that the commission acted inappropriately in making the decision. It doesn't say that he can discriminate. Basically, the law has been the same forever. Let me give you another example. There was a case years ago where Native Americans wanted to smoke peyote, And they said, that's our religious beliefs, which it was. It was a legitimate religious belief. But the court said, listen, we have drug laws, and we can't allow you to do that. Yes, you have a First Amendment right. Yes, you have a right to practice your religion. But when it conflicts with one of our laws, then our laws are going to survive and going to trump your religious beliefs. So, you know, people think that your rights to religion are absolute. They aren't. And when they conflict with the issue of discrimination, that's when they're going to fall. And that's what's going to happen in all the cases that come out of this, even with the conservative justices that we have now.
All right. So it's a ruling on a ruling. It's not a ruling on how we should live our lives.
No, it doesn't provide any precedent, meaning it doesn't provide any guidance going forward. And I think that because the press really did not do a good job of reporting this, I think there's going to be people all over, mark my words, who are going to refuse service to people, and they're going to call it their religious beliefs, and these are all going to go to court, and it's going to be a big mess. I think that everyone needs to understand that you can't refuse to serve people because of your, quote, religious beliefs. That's just not the way it's going to work.
Bob Mueller wants to put Paul Manafort in jail immediately for witness tampering. What qualifies as witness tampering?
It's really just even in a civil case or a criminal case where you're calling up witnesses and you're trying to get them to change their testimony. You're trying to get them to do what you want them to do, or you're intimidating them. You see that a lot in gang cases or in organized crime where people actually disappear and get killed. But what he was apparently doing, according to the government, was calling up witnesses and saying, you remember it this way, don't you? So the government said that was one of the conditions of his $10 million bail, that he couldn't be calling witnesses and trying to get them to change testimony, and they're going to try to revoke his bond and put him in jail pending trial.
And it somehow involved WhatsApp, like he thought that would be a way where people wouldn't find out he was doing it?
I mean, you know, it's a thin line because, you know, witnesses, I mean, people who are accused and their lawyers should be able to call witnesses and say, what is it that you're going to say and what do you remember and what is it that, you know, that the government is asking you to say? But when you try, when you step over the line of saying, well, you must do it this way or use intimidation, that's when it crosses the line. And apparently the government thinks they have a case for that.
Can the president sue the Philadelphia Eagles for embarrassing him? God, I'm kidding.
No.
That's not an actual case.
If he could, he would.
You're not eligible to win the Monkees tickets, but I invite you to play Monkey True or False later. That'll be fun for you. In the meantime, go to work and help people, will you?
I'm going to do that.
All right, Karen Conti, thank you. We'll come back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Monkees tickets coming up. The Mike and Mickey Show. Tickets at CopernicusCenter.org. Coming up, one of our favorite people is on the phone. And in advance, thank you to all the amazing listeners of this show with another crazy great story that we'll tell you in just a second. But let's see here. Line 9, I believe, right? Yeah, Susan Mahan joins us now. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
How are you, rock star?
Oh, we're good. Someone else awake that I wanted to say hi.
Come on, is Owen with you?
Yep.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Good.
Nice talking to you again. Are you 10 yet?
I'm 10.
You're 10 years old. When's your birthday?
July 26th.
What did I get you last year? That's right. I got to get you something this year. I should have stepped up. Are you still playing baseball and stuff?
Yep.
You're the best. I love this kid. Susan, little backstory here. Owen is a miracle. He was burned over 98% of his body in scalding hot water. You and your family adopted him, I believe, in 2012, right, Susan?
Correct.
And honestly, the miracles have been happening ever since then. What else do people know about Owen's background, need to know about Owen's background? And your backstory.
With Owen, he's just so positive about everything. No matter what's going on in his life, no matter what's happening at the point, he always is positive. He wakes up every morning, the first thing he says is, it's going to be a great day.
You're quite a kid, pal. You really are, and you're such an inspiration to everybody else. And one of our listeners who heard you, Susan, the first time that you were on, and has heard every other time we've talked about it, and it just had followed your story, wanted to help in her own way. And I don't know. Do we have permission to give her name out? I don't know if we do or not. But her first name is Betty. I can say that.
Her first name is Betty. I don't think she wants everyone to know her full name, and she'd done this to not get any credit for it.
Right. So, Betty, thank you. A check for $3,000 just for stepping up.
$3,000. Wow. Yeah. To help cover some of the orthodontic costs that I'm going to have with two of the kiddos.
Now, how many kids do you have?
Right now, we have only six.
Only six?
Only six.
Yeah, of course. Oh, and it must be a fun house, I guess, right?
Yep.
What are you doing today that's going to be fun?
I'm putting my legs on.
That's right, putting your legs on, because you got to put your legs on to start your day. Susan, explain that, please.
Okay, so Owen recently just had another surgery a few weeks ago. The bone in his right leg decided to grow, and he had to have another inch and a half trimmed off of it. So he hasn't been able to wear his legs for a little over a month now, so... Guess what today is? Today we're putting our leg back on.
And that's why it's fun.
That's why it's a fun day today.
Right, because Owen can get up, get going, and run around and be the goofy kid he ought to be.
Yeah. Owen, he is, he's crazy with this wheelchair. He is, I think since the last time we spoke with you, he tipped it over and got a black eye.
I heard you're quite the daredevil, Owen.
Yep. Part of my eyebrow is missing.
What your eyebrow's missing? Well, we'll have to find it. Listen, here's the deal. You have an amazing family, Susan, and I tell you this every time I talk to you, but you are a crazy good inspiration to the rest of us as well, to take on all that you've taken on in life. So anytime we can help you is great. I love that the listener, Betty, stepped up, but I hope others will do the same. You're not asking for the help. I am. Is your GoFundMe page still up?
It is still up, yes.
All right, so we go to GoFundMe. What do we search?
Just Owen Mahan.
OwenMahan.
Yes.
And how old are the kids? What age range?
The youngest one is two. I have a two-year-old, a recently three-year-old. Then we have two eight-year-olds. And then Owen's going to be 11 next month. And then Taylor is 13.
No, he's 14.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
You know what? You got to keep an eye on Mom. You know what I'm saying, Owen?
Yeah, he does sometimes. So while he's sitting up here, he has a challenge for all your listeners.
Oh, well, I'd love to hear it. What's the challenge, buddy?
Random acronym kindness. So you go around and then do something nice for somebody.
So random acts of kindness.
Yep.
So just whatever you can today, just do something nice for somebody else.
Yep. Like, we paid for somebody's McDonald's. He looked like he was having a bad day.
Well, and when somebody's having a bad day, you want to help, right?
Yep.
We
also paid for somebody's pretzel.
So all you'd like to do is all the listeners do a random act of kindness today. That'd be a positive change in the world, wouldn't it?
Things on that day.
You're a good young man, Owen. Owen, what do you want to be when you grow up?
A vet.
Oh, you like critters? You like animals?
Yep.
What do you like best? Dogs, cats, chickens, birds, wolves? What do you like?
Wolves?
mostly dogs.
Mostly dogs. Do you have a dog?
We're thinking about getting one, mm-hmm. but we don't know
yet. Well, you should definitely get one because you don't have enough going on in your house.
It's a therapy dog. It's for me to help, like, get up and, like, whenever I fall down.
Sure, I understand that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's about not getting him because he's too, like, happy around babies.
Yeah, he's got to be good around babies.
I understand that, yeah, because you got youngsters in the house. And I bet you're a good big brother, Owen.
We also want to share with you that we made a trip to Chicago a few weeks back and visited a school there.
We had a chance to tell Owen's story, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Liberty Junior High. Yes, Owen spoke to the whole school, and started out, and he commanded that audience. I was so proud of him and so shocked at how well he was speaking to them.
Like, he is, like, Cubs, like, famous, like, baseball players come in.
How about that? Well, you're a big shot now, pal. Everybody wants to have an opportunity to say hi to you, which is nice. Again, thank you guys very much. And thanks to Betty. What a way to step up. You know, if you go to the GoFundMe, again, I'm asking, if you go to the GoFundMe page and just search Owen Mahan, and you can help too if you choose to do so. But in the meantime, all Owen wants you to do is go out and have a good day yourself today and do a random act of kindness for somebody else. Owen and Susan, thank you very much. Thanks for inspiring us to be better people.
You're welcome. Thank you for this. And I also want to thank all your listeners that continue to send him cards.
Yeah, you love the cards still, don't you, Owen?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Hold on. We'll get the make sure we have the address posted as well. Thank you, buddy. Give Mom a hug, and I'll talk to you later, okay?
Yeah.
Well, well, well.
Unbelievable.
I think we can wrap it up now and go home.
I think so. I'm going to top that.
As soon as he said, I'm putting on my leg today, I mean, that just puts everything in perspective.
That's why he's happy. That's why he's happy, because he gets to put his legs on again.
And all he's asking is we go out and do a random act of kindness.
Because they paid for McDonald's for a guy because the guy looked like he was having a bad day.
Yeah.
Again, he's putting on his legs. He saw a guy that looked like he was having a bad day. They paid for the McDonald's.
And I'm whining about the sun in my eyes.
Anybody that's whining, I hope, heard that phone call.
Yes, exactly.
That kid blows me away every time we talk to him. And by the way, Susan Mahan, some people are put on this earth to do things to make the rest of us understand why we should do a little more.
No.
This woman continues to step up. How many kids in the house now? Just six.
Yeah, and some are babies, right?
Yeah, and she's fostering all the time. Wow.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Later today, Lou Manfredini, Dan Hampton, and I will be at Channel 9. We're doing some videos. Mary Sandberg, where are these going to appear? Are these on the ChevyDriveChicago.com website, I assume?
WGN Radio website.
Oh, we're going to WGN Radio as well. Well, that would make sense because it's our contest. So those will be at the WGNRadio.com website. Nothing gets by me, Dave. I'm not just another pretty face.
No, we know that.
So Hamp and Lou and I will be shooting some videos with the Centennial Blue, limited edition Centennial Blue, 100th anniversary Centennial Blue Chevy Silverado. We have a new addition to the Silverado spotting gallery today?
We do. Sorry, I was giving the Sox tickets away in there, so I couldn't answer you.
Ah.
So you go to WGNRadio.com/contests to enter to win the Centennial Edition Chevy Silverado. But there's a gallery at WGNRadio.com that I'll share it on our Steve Cochran Show Facebook and Twitter that has people who have seen Silverados around town, et cetera.
And Silverado spotters.
Yes. And our very own Mary Vandeveld's husband, Steve, he contributed. He is an amazing Silverado. And it looks like the picture was taken in the North Woods, Mayor.
Yes, he's up at the cabin. Oh. So he's like, Sandberg wants pictures of my Silverado. I go, not particularly your Silverado, but
oh, I do. And
he's
it
so
looks,
proud of it.
I want to take that one for a spin as well.
Oh, I'll let you do that.
Thank you.
It's 2017, though, Mayor.
Yeah, that's okay. And it's black.
It's like a metallic gray.
It's
a really cool dark color.
It is a cool. Yeah.
Silverado
cool
owners, the Vandevelds.
Yeah, we have a granny getter out or two.
Yeah, the handle
to help you get in and out.
Yes, works great.
So anyone should text us their pictures of any Silverados that they see.
You know, Mary, the granny getter outer now applies to you.
I know, and I use it. He even has the what's the leg ramp thing? What is that called?
The running boards?
Thank you. Yeah. He has the running boards, so you step on the running board.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have that and the granny getter out.
Oh,
so,
please. Anybody can get in and out of that vehicle. Yeah,
even my 93-year-old mother can.
Yeah, which makes it great.
Yeah.
I love that Silverado.
You'll see the Silverado that you can win how?
WGNRadio.com/contest.
We got pictures up there, I'm sure, don't we?
We do have pictures of that one as well. It's beautiful.
Yes. And do we know what Hamp and Lou and I are doing today?
I do not.
You guys haven't rehearsed?
An NFL Hall of Famer like no other one of the great Mr. Fix-Its on the planet. I mean, who knows more about fixing stuff than Lou Manfredini? Mm-hmm. And a dopey talk show host all together for the first time.
I want to know. So you're, for those of you that can't see Steve, he's wearing a fancy red shirt today.
Fancy, so, yes.
Did you guys coordinate? Did you get like a list that said you had to be in red, or?
No, I asked about wardrobe, and I was told by another dude, which is always a bad idea to get information from another dude, Kevin McDonough, okay, one of our fine sales folks. Kevin McDonough said, you know, like a simple collared shirt, maybe a polo.
Okay, so not much.
So I decided I'd throw on this red shirt and bring a black golf shirt, so we're covered on both spectrums.
Oh, there you go. Okay, because if you're like, I didn't know if you're,
if everybody's in red, it'll look
right. It looks silly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a subtle nod to the Blackhawks, though, I feel.
Yeah, it always is. Mm-hmm. Sure. You know,
the red will go well with the centennial blue.
Yes, very patriotic.
Yeah, and my eyes.
And your eyes.
Yes. All right, so can we play a quick round of Monkey Fun Facts?
Can I tell you Highwood Al won the Sox tickets?
Oh, Highwood Al won the Sox tickets. Yep. And I'm being told we can't play Monkey Fun Facts. What did you call it?
No, it's
know your monkeys.
Oh, it's late. I get it. Know your monkeys. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do it after we talk to Max Armstrong, coming up after headlines at 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs.
742, coming up, Know Your Monkey. Love is the answer. Know Your Monkeys. For monkeys tickets.
That's with a Y.
Know Your Monkeys. At 7:42.
Look what I'm eating right now.
I'm sorry?
Look what I'm eating.
Oh, right, look at you. You're having a banana, you little
just
monkey.
For the
look
occasion.
At you. At 7:42, the voice you're about to hear is one of the legends of WGN and a friend of mine who I have not spoken to in a long time. But here's what guys do. Guys get together and they start talking and they haven't talked to each other. I bet it's been a year, 2 years maybe, since I talked to this guy. And you start talking and in 30 seconds, you're right back to where you were. You know, there's no awkwardness or anything.
Nope. You just pick up where you left off.
That's exactly right. Ladies and gentlemen, Max Armstrong.
And, of course, there's no awkwardness when you leave the guy by saying, oh, it's monkey time. We're going to talk to the monkey here. Thank you. Appreciate that. You rascal, you.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing swell. How are you folks?
We're doing fine. I miss you.
I hear the U-Haul's backed up to the back door there.
Yeah, well, listen, we got to move the whole building. I hope that's not a problem. I hope your back is still strong.
Well, listen, hey, I moved enough stuff up 3 flats on the north side of Chicago for the youngest daughter. I served notice at everybody that I was out of moves.
Is that right?
More the ways kid, than one.
The kid moved to the third floor of a 3-flat, and I thought she liked you.
Oh, it happened more than once, pal. I'm telling you.
So here's the deal, Max. Next Friday, we assume, though this is a contractor situation, it could take a little longer. Next Friday, we assume, will be our last day here. So we wanted to connect with you to talk about all the years you spent in this building, because I believe you were here at 86 when they came back from Bradley Place, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, and it was an exciting time. You know, where the Showcase Studio is, there used to be the candy store, of course.
Okay,
right. And it moved across to there, but it, yeah.
What was the candy store?
It was Fannie Mae.
Fannie Mae was in this spot?
Yes.
Prior to the Showcase Studio?
You're right there. I mean, you could right now grab some bonbons.
Bonbons and the nonpareils, and the, but yeah, yes. All those? Okay. So when did the Showcase Studio go in? Was it shortly after that?
It was a little bit delayed because of the fact that there was a shortage of bulletproof glass back in those days. True story. There had been terror incidents around the world, and the State Department was having to upgrade the embassies all around the world. And so there was a shortage of the glass needed in a studio of that nature. So it was a little bit delayed, as I recall, in the opening in 1986. But, you know, it's such a strange thing. There was no Showcase Studio in Chicago at that time. You know, nobody was showcasing their news department on television or doing anything in the way of radio. So this was really new to the city at the time.
Yeah, and back to the bulletproof for a second, because this glass has been replaced, I think, historically 3 different times. After 9/11, the FBI and the CIA both came through here because the Tribune Tower was a target. And we were told that the glass might not... It's funny now. The glass might not be bulletproof, but it is bullet resistant. I said, what is bullet resistant?
Yeah, right.
So it like bounces off.
Well, it's like water resistant windbreakers. So it had to be replaced again. All right. So was there anybody in the country doing a showcase studio?
Yeah, you know, there were some cities, some smaller cities where you would see them. For example, I remember in Indianapolis back in the late 60s, the rock station there, WYFE, had a showcase studio along Meridian, as I recall. So there were some across the country, certainly even as early as the 60s. But it was pretty new to Chicago, as a matter of fact. And to put a microphone outside where you could talk to people, that was very different, too.
Yeah, I used to open the afternoon show every day with that. Now, here's the deal. The rest of the building, where people didn't normally get to see, has stories all to its own. And the big room, where you and I used to occasionally see each other, I used to call it the Vegas room, down here on this first floor, that's where all the biggest stars of WGN worked.
Yeah, it was a huge studio. Of course, it was a multi-purpose studio. One side of it, you operated with an engineer at the control board to handle all of the input on those very busy shows. And then the other position was where the announcer ran the board themselves, the combo position, as it was called in the industry. But in that studio in total, I think there were 11 microphones between maybe more than that, about a dozen microphones between the one end of the studio to the other.
And favorite memories from shows or people you worked with?
Oh, where do you start, Steve? There were just so many over the years. But, you know, talking about the building and the center that it was, two things stand out in my mind. The morning of the big underground flood in Chicago.
Oh, sure.
And I remember walking out, and of course, the Tribune building took in water in, what, the fifth or sixth basement? You know, there are multiple basements in that building. And there was water that came into the Tribune building in that underground flood. But you walked out on the street at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it was like a ghost town. It was like it might have been Sunday morning. There was nobody on the streets. And, of course, the morning of the terrorist attacks of 9/11, when you saw the commute coming in the 7 o'clock hour, and 90 minutes later there was a reverse commute, this great big sucking sound out of the downtown area as people were headed home.
Tell me about working with Wally.
It was remarkable. Of course, you had to be on your toes all the time. You never knew what was going to be coming up between Wally and his longtime veteran producer, Marilyn Miller, who contributed mightily to that show. And then the various engineers who sat at the control board and dropped in those sound tracks that Wally needed in the show. It was just a great thing. And, of course, he was pioneering back in those days. He was the first to call up people and put them on the radio. And finally, the Federal Communications Commission said, oh, wait a minute. You need to be telling these people you're putting them on the radio.
You know, good morning. I was trying to count up the number of people who worked on Wally's show the other day. We were having a conversation, and back on Bradley Place when I first started and walked into the studio for the first time, and I think you were in there. There were two news anchors. There was a record turner, a music director, an engineer, Marilyn producing, another producer. I was a cast of thousands to produce that radio show. It's really remarkable when you consider how technology has advanced and how much went into that, because everything was on, they were on discs, the commercials,
all the
right?
Commercials. Yeah, all of the commercials were. They would take the commercial, and for every other show, it would be on tape cartridge. But as you very correctly remember, Dave, when the commercial was prepared for Wally, it would be put on a disc. The staff musician, the record turner, would cue up that disc and write down the first 8 to 10 words of that commercial and put it over on the easel in front of Wally. That way he knew how to lead into it. He would say, now, George, you were saying what? And the commercial would start, hey, I want to talk to you about this banking problem. You know, something like that. It was very smooth and fluid.
The choreography. All right, so then Bob Collins comes in. And Orion tells the story of how, and he became best friends with Bob Collins later on, but he tells the story of meeting Bob Collins, and this was this country boy sort of yokel, and he was thinking in his head, what the hell's going on at WGN? What was your reaction?
That's right. Well, Bob had been there 3 years already by the time I arrived, and he was doing his split shift in the afternoon between 2 and 4, and then he'd come back in the evening at 7 to 9. And there were more than a few evenings between 4 and 7 spent at Grover's Groovy Oyster Bar up on Irving Park Road.
Oh, yeah.
and I went there, I think, with him a few times, and I'd wrap up the market reports late in the afternoon, and I think that's about when Orion called me aside and said, now, son, I don't think this is probably the best thing for your future to be going with Bob Collins at the Grover's Oyster Bar.
And I'm right about this story, right? Didn't they become best friends before Bob passed?
And they certainly were not at the outset. Now, by the time I arrived in 77, they had gotten over that bump. But, you know, I mean, there was some mutual animosity at the outset. Neither one felt the other should be there at the station. But, as you say, the friendship was very firm. They loved each other dearly. And it's been obviously a terrible loss for all of us, but especially for Orion to not have the friendship and companionship of Bob Collins, who was just such a close friend.
Max, I have to just recall one thing, which was I would come in when Spike was doing his show here at the Tower from Studio A, and I would come in to do the sports at 5 o'clock. You would spend that last half hour from 4:30 to 5 with Steve and Johnny, or approximately 4:30. Steve would do the front page, right? He'd do what was in the papers that day. And then you'd come in, and I would always come in there, and invariably, and that was before Spike would come in and kiss you on the head or whatever, but Johnny would be in hysterics because of something, usually something you had said.
Well, the truth can now be told, Dave. I mean, I would stop out in Lyle on my way in. I would stop and get a Mountain Dew. I would drink a Mountain Dew on my way downtown.
Oh, so that's what to happened studio, to you, Max. Now we know.
Yes, Mary, I was a walking time bomb when I came in back.
You were hilarious.
He was all sugared up.
I was like, what's wrong with
exactly
him?
Exactly right. Now the truth can be told. Okay, there's one more story I have to tell you about that building. That microphone out of the front window?
Yeah.
When that microphone was put out there by the late Ed Wilkes, longtime WGN engineer,
sure,
one of the most knowledgeable people in broadcast transmitters that I had ever met, and he was just a wonderful gentleman. And was single back in those days. He had not been married, never been married, and he wore the pocket protector. Ed Wilk was your stereotypical engineer. He told me in confidence one day, he said, Max, we're trying to put that microphone out there on the window, and we're having a problem. I'm trying to figure out how to waterproof that thing. He told me then he called the microphone company, Shure Microphone Company, and they said, well, you can do what they do at the White House. Ed said, what's that? They put a prophylactic on the microphone. So Ed got the material, got the latex, and wrapped that microphone, the early microphones out of that window at least, protected that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's turn it on right now.
Is it still on there?
It's on there. Hello? 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 It doesn't sound like there's a condom covering it now.
You should get a random person walking by to take it off.
Now, Steve?
Yeah, you know what? The microphone that we'll have at the new place is 18 floors up, so you're going to have to shout. But it's great talking to you. I'm glad life is great, and I hope I see you soon, buddy. I love reconnecting with you.
Oh, I love talking to you guys. Appreciate your great work. I listen to you from afar many mornings and from nearby at least one morning of the week.
Well, thanks for all you're doing, and you'll see O before we do again, and say hi to him.
All right, will do. You guys take care. Good luck with the move over there. I can't wait to come in and help spoil the premises.
Yeah, I'll call you as soon as it's done. It's Max Armstrong. He's no longer in the moving business. It's 7:53. What's coming up at 8?
Steve, there's been another fatal fire this morning in Chicago. This one claimed the life of an elderly man in the Pullman neighborhood. That story's coming up at 8 o'clock from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
All right, I'm not done messing around now. It's Know Your Monkeys time. If you want to win monkeys tickets, 312-981-7200. You're definitely going to win. 312-981-7200. Call now.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Let's go to, let's see, is it Nancy? Yes, it is. Nancy's on the phone to play Know Your Monkey. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Who's your favorite monkey?
Mickey.
Mickey's your favorite monkey. Mickey the monkey?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You sound very coy, Nancy. What are you up to this morning?
I'm working.
Oh, good, good, good. So you're hiding. You're hiding. All right, so we'll try to keep you from getting in trouble at work. We're going to ask you true false questions about monkeys. By the way, you have a lovely voice.
Thank you.
Yes. And now do you want to tell us what you do for a living and exactly where you're doing it?
No.
Okay, just checking. All right, remember, you can ask for help from anybody on the show, okay? This is either a true or false statement about monkeys.
Okay.
Raw or cooked monkey brain is a delicacy in China and Malaysia. True or false?
True.
I believe that's true. Anybody on the staff want to chime in?
I believe that is true.
You believe that's true. Steve, you're a culinary expert. You like a monkey brain?
I believe it is true as well. Yes.
It is true. Congratulations. You're off
Thank
and running.
You.
All right. Remember, you must answer 75 questions correctly to win these tickets. All right. It's three. Question number two. Scientists have observed female monkeys teaching young monkeys, baby monkeys, their monkeys, how to floss their teeth. Is that true or false, Steve?
Oh, boy, this is a tough one because dental hygiene is important. I'm going to say it is false.
Mary Vandeville, do monkeys teach their young how to floss their teeth?
I don't know. Mother monkeys are pretty smart, so I'm going to go with a yes.
Yes, Dave?
True.
Well, I guess the question is waxed or unwaxed floss. But I'm going to say
or scented.
I'm going to say no.
You're going to say no.
I'm going to say no.
Nancy, are you a mom?
Yes, I am.
And would you think mom monkeys teach their baby monkeys how to floss?
The answer is true.
Yes.
Is it? Yes, that's exactly right. Monkey moms have taught their babies how to floss. You're only one question away from fabulous prizes.
I'm hearing things.
Let's go to it now. Maybe you bumped your head. At the tip of a monkey's tail is a patch of bare skin that acts similar to a human's fingertips. This tip is sensitive to touch and has ridges on the tail for a better grip as well and appears much like a bald spot. Is that tip of a monkey's tail called a Cochrane? True or false? Let's go to you directly, Nancy. Is that true or false? It's called a Cochrane, the bald spot on a monkey's tail. It's questionable,
it's
isn't
tough.
It? It's tough.
It's tough.
It's tough. I think I know the answer. Would a bald spot on a monkey's tail, Nancy, be called a Cochrane?
Would explain a lot of things.
It certainly would. Wouldn't it?
Nancy, okay, what do you think?
I'm going to say true.
You think it's true? Anyone else? Nancy's just saying this. She's trying to get back to me.
I don't know if it's true, but that's what I'm calling it from now on.
I don't know. I just Googled it and Steve's picture came up. I'm not sure what's going on.
Nancy, I know you're just kidding around. Of course that's false. There's no name for it. It's just a bald spot on a tail, and you're a big winner.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You didn't even get fired. A pair of tickets to see the Monkees present the Mike and Mickey Show featuring Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. It's Thursday, June 14th. That's next Thursday at the Copernicus Center at I-90 and Lawrence Avenue, copernicuscenter.org. Thank you, Nancy. You're a delightful listener.
Good. Thank you.
Dean Richards next, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
It's 8:15, Dean Richards, live at Channel 9. It's Moron Entertainment.
Emphasis on more.
I don't know. The on's important, too. It's sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. You know, we have these monitors in studios, I mentioned many times before, and you keep popping up talking to the great Bob Mackey.
In case we get bored, people don't know, in case we get bored by our own shows, we can look up and watch TV.
Right, and drool.
While the shows are going on. Yeah, yesterday, the legendary fashion designer Bob Mackey was in town. He literally has dressed everyone who is anyone in Hollywood for the past 50,
including you and I,
including Steve and I, when we went to the Golden Globes that one year. Strapless, I don't mind strapless so much, but using Black & Decker tools,
a lot of duct tape,
hair that needs to be removed is not. I don't want to hear Black & Decker in that same sentence.
No, it's no damn good.
Yeah, it's not good.
We have a clip, don't we, of you talking to Bob Mackey?
We have actually a couple of clips because he's the costume designer for this new musical that's going to be opening next week, The Cher Show.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about Cher's life and career. And
speaking of duct tape,
sounds
that,
like it's going to be great.
Remember that naval destroyer outfit she had on? Speaking of duct tape,
it's one of the. He talks about that. He wasn't a big fan of that outfit, among other things that he wasn't such a big fan of. But he also designed all of Carol Burnett's outfits on her show. In fact, that's how he got introduced to Cher, was through the Carol Burnett show.
Okay.
Maybe his most famous outfit that he designed for her was the one for that Gone with the Wind spoof.
Yes,
where
she
takes the curtains off the wall, goes upstairs and come out, and she's got the curtain rod on her shoulder still with the curtains, and here's what he said about it.
People still talk about that, and it's in the Smithsonian now, so it's really famous.
How did you come up with that?
Well, it was just a joke. It was written in the script, but it didn't say. It just said she went up the stairs with the curtains and came down dressed in the curtains. And I thought, well, what do I do now? And it took me a while to figure it out. I always loved developing a character for her that she repeated, but we never knew when we were going to repeat. So sometimes things that we didn't expect, like Eunice and the family, that character went on and on and on. Nora Desmond, they called her on that, where all, you know, the old silent movie star, she loved doing that.
You were responsible for Mrs. Wiggins?
Mrs. Wiggins. Yeah. Well, Mrs. Wiggins, it's an interesting thing. Mrs. Wiggins, who was a secretary for Mr. Tudball, was written to be a really old lady and kind of tottering. And I said to Carol, I said, you've done so many old ladies and people are kind of complaining. Why don't we make her like those temp girls that come in, they can't do anything, you know, and they just sit and do their nails and watch the clock and go to lunch and come back and they don't really know how to do a thing.
You know, I had no idea he was funny, but he obviously has a sense of humor.
He invented some of these characters.
And Mrs. Wiggins, tight dress, big booty, way before Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, exactly. So, some legendary characters. And legendary outfits for Cher. So many of them on her music videos through the years and on her appearances on award shows. Maybe the most famous was not when she won the Academy Award, but when she presented an Academy Award, and she came out with this big feathered headdress and practically nothing else on, and he talked about that.
Well, she was kind of mad because she didn't get nominated. And she was like, well, she should have gotten nominated, but she didn't. And she said, well, let's just dress up. What the hell? And she hadn't been, you know, where she used to wear all the funny things on television variety shows, she hadn't been doing that for a few years because she'd been on Broadway in plays and playing kind of down characters. And so she said, let's get dressed up. Let's do a wild Indian outfit.
Yeah. What do you think of fashion today?
I don't think there is any fashion today. I think it's just all over the place.
Really?
I don't think there are any rules. Women, you know, they say, oh, I don't want to have rules, but they really do. They like to know, do they look nice? Is this the right length for my skirt? Now it's everywhere. You see, you walk down the street and you see all kinds of things you shouldn't be seeing. All of a sudden, we start watching these award things and these big Met balls in New York where they come dressed up and they admit they're inspired by Cher from the old days. So it's kind of funny, really, how everything kind of comes around again.
Right. It's so funny that somebody who broke so many boundaries thinks that there are no boundaries today.
It's interesting, right?
That, you know, fashion's sort of all over the place. When I said, so what do you think of Lady Gaga fashion, like the meat outfit, he just went, ugh.
So did the butcher. Listen, did he say anything? We'll get to the Kate Spade story when we come back on the other side of the break, but did Bob Mackie have any comments on that?
He did not. I asked him if he wanted to say anything about it, because the story broke literally when we finished the interview. The bulletin went off on my phone. But I asked him, I said, you know, I hate to bring this up, but Kate Spade was just, you know, found dead, apparent suicide. And he said that he would be happy to give me a comment, but he didn't really know her, never met her, never really had any you know, conversations with her. So he said, honestly, I don't really think I would have any substantive comments, which you totally understand.
In interest of your time, because I know you got to go to TV, let's continue here. Sandberg, talk to me about how important Kate Spade was.
Oh, she's a game changer as far as a style icon. I had one of the first bag, the Sam, is that black nylon boxy bag that everyone wanted.
Me too.
You had one too?
Me too.
I got one when I was a freshman in college.
Me too.
And they were, I have Kate Spade china.
Me too.
I have.
Do you remember Jack Spade? Because the Jack Spade bags didn't have that big a run, did they?
No. No.
But that was the men's line that they came up with.
Yeah, and then she had a line named after her daughter. She sold Kate Spade, you know, I think part of it in like 96 and the rest in 2000.
$2 billion.
Yeah, to Coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to Coach. And then Neiman Marcus also bought some of her shares. But she's creative. Everybody that worked with her said, forget about her own work. She was such a mentor and very creative and would help people with their ideas.
And like, she went to journalism school.
Yeah, she was never had a design class in her life.
Very interesting, because Kate Spade's sister in Kansas City, where they're originally from, said the suicide was not a surprise to her, that she's been riddled with
awful
depression and mental illness, alcoholism, that she was fascinated by Robin Williams' suicide a few years ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And thinks that she began to plan her own death after Robin Williams committed his own suicide. And just as you're describing Kate Spade and how everyone looked up to her, you know, as being so creative and so, you know, pushing the envelope, everyone did for Robin Williams also.
Her brother-in-law, David Spade, tweeted yesterday a picture of her at one of his book signings, and she's, like, laughing. And he said no one had any idea how bleeping funny she was.
Yeah. And tweeted, it's a rough world out there. Yeah. People try to hang on.
Here's the deal. And I said this earlier in the show, and I've lost two friends to suicide. Depression doesn't care. It doesn't care how rich you are. It doesn't care how famous you are. It doesn't care how pretty you are. It doesn't care if you're not any of those things. And you can't fix somebody who's going through it, but you can certainly help. Ask them why they're sad. Ask them why they're hurting. Listen. Listen less than you talk, and offer to help them find the resources they need. And Rebecca's Dream is a place that I would ask you to take a look at, rebeccasdream.org. It's one place to go. All right, Oprah's getting honored for what?
Well, I was hoping that you were going to get this award, but apparently Oprah gets it first because she has donated $21 million to the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. I know you've only donated $20 million to
So what's the award?
Museum. It's going to be an Oprah exhibit called Watching Oprah, The Oprah Winfrey Show and American Culture. Video clips of her show, exploring her childhood, her philanthropy.
Look, that's all worthy, but what about an exhibit for people who think they're a black entertainer? That's what I should be in.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There should have been.
I'm outraged.
The an exhibit called Listening to Steve. He thinks he's a black guy.
The Glenn Campbell biopic?
Kim Campbell, his widow, confirmed that they are going to be making one. The same director that did the documentary on Glenn Campbell a few years ago is going to be working on this. He was also a producer on the Johnny Cash biopic, Walk the Line, a few years ago. Yeah. So it's a director with some credentials. Who's going to be in it, when it's going to be out, all those things. We don't know any of those things yet, but there is going to be a Glenn Campbell movie.
He's a nice man.
Yes, he was.
All right, you got to run. I'll talk to you.
Yep.
That's Dean. He's got a little TV assignment he's got to jump to. Oh, I couldn't have made it sound that look cuter, didn't I? Oh, look, he's got a cute little TV assignment.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's going to go do his job.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
The Steve Cochran Show at 828 is a very historic day in this country. This is not just the anniversary of D-Day, the 74th anniversary of D-Day. And if you missed it earlier, we had on a couple of representatives from Honor Flight, including a World War II vet, now on the way to Washington to see the memorial built for them. Korean veterans and World War II veterans, both on this plane. It is also the anniversary of the murder of Robert F. Kennedy. And Senator Robert Kennedy, amongst his last words were, now it's on to Chicago and let's win there, that night in Los Angeles before he walked through a hotel kitchen and was killed by Sirhan Sirhan. It's hard to pick Kennedy's greatest speeches, but the one moment that always struck me, and I'm sure many of you as well, was when he stood on the back of a flatbed truck in Indianapolis and addressed a crowd that was almost entirely African-Americans. In April of 1968, in the very early days of his campaign, on the night that Martin Luther King was murdered in Memphis. And he chose to tell that crowd, which could have gone very badly, to tell that crowd what had happened. We've got a clip here I want to play for you. It's pretty amazing. Listen.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times.
Martin Luther King, I believe, was 39 when he died, and just a short time later, matter of weeks later, 50 years ago today, Bobby Kennedy would be dead as well at the age of 42 in that amazingly disgusting, crazy year of 1968. There's quite a documentary on CNN right now called 1968.
I saw it, yeah.
It's really well done. It's two-parter. It's not hard to catch up on demand, and I'd advise it. And share that history with your kids, too.
50th year of the convention in Chicago, too.
Exactly.
Coming up on that.
They do a lot in that CNN piece about that.
We'll be dealing a series on that coming up later this summer as well. Got Walter Jacobson we're going to talk to. It'll be a lot of fun.
Right around the time of that as well on the
50th. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's the WGN Newsroom. Continues to do nice jobs on those extended pieces, those series. All right, we'll take a break, come back. Your headlines are next with Ryan at 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
42, President Clinton appeared last night with Stephen Colbert. He is touring and promoting his first work of fiction, Where the President Goes Missing. And he wrote it with a very famous author. Who is his co-author? Why am I spacing on this? Google that up for me, Dave, will you?
Yes, yes.
James.
He's been sitting there for all. He was there for the interview.
Yes. Yes, he's not getting the majority of the questions. James Patterson. Yes. And the book, I'm told, is good. But the question came up with Craig Melvin from NBC News, who was filling in on the Today Show the other day, about the Me Too movement and about Monica Lewinsky. And Bill Clinton did not react well to that. He tried to clean it up last night with Colbert. But before any of that happened, this happened 2 days ago.
Well, I asked if you'd ever apologized, and you said you had.
I have.
You've apologized.
I apologize to everybody in the world.
He said he didn't owe an apology, or he said that he didn't feel that he would do another apology because he already handled the public apology. Here's what the president should have done last night, and he should have done a few days ago. Simply look in the camera with all the authority and all the thump that Bill Clinton has and say the world needs to get off Monica Lewinsky's back. Not necessarily in those words, but the world needs to give Monica Lewinsky a break. Her life has been inexorably damaged by the relationship that the two of them had. Bill Clinton has gone on to be Bill Clinton. And the right thing to do would be to stand up and tell people who support him that Monica Lewinsky should not be continue to have her life held in limbo as it has been for the last 20 years for decisions that they made when she was 21 years old.
And he's never said that.
No.
Has he?
No. No, it's unfortunate. You juxtapose that against Dwight Eisenhower on this 74th anniversary of D-Day. He was president on the 10th anniversary of D-Day. And unlike Donald Trump, or unlike many modern-era presidents, he wasn't looking for any limelight. Trump's middle name is Limelight. Did you know that? It's not James. It's Donald Limelight Trump. And Dwight Eisenhower, General Eisenhower, was at Camp David on the 10th anniversary of D-Day. Here is a bit of that D-Day Operation Overlord Day, the speech from General Eisenhower. I want to play that for you today on this anniversary.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force,
You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeat in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
General Eisenhower tasked the greatest generation with saving the world, and that's all they did, starting with taking out Hitler and saving Europe. The D-Day invasion of 1944, that anniversary today as well. It is 8:47. The great Len Carreyrou is here, who apparently became Tom Selleck's father when he was six. I've done the math. We'll come back and talk to Tony Award-winning Len Carreyrou in just a second, live in studio at 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, this is a good thing for me. It's a good thing for you. It's a good thing for the show. The great Len Carreyrou is here. One of the finest actors, period. Working today, working yesterday, and working tomorrow in town for an evening of Shakespeare and song at Stage 773 starting tonight and through the 10th. Broadway and the Bard, an evening of Shakespeare and song. We'll tell you how to get tickets in just a second. Len, it's an honor. We've never spoken.
No, we haven't.
All these years, I figured I would have darkened your door by now, but it's great to see you because I know you get in and out of town a fair amount.
Yeah, well, it's not a fair amount, but I've been here, you know, occasionally over the years. I've been here as an actor.
Did you Steppenwolf stuff, or where do you want?
No, I hadn't been. I was on the national tour of Showboat and the national tour of Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And we were here for, you know, at least a week or so.
I did
that. But I've always, and when I first got here, I was at the good, I was here with James Earl Jones.
Oh, at the Goodman.
At the Goodman Theater School, yeah.
The legendary sports figure to your left, in my right, Dave Ennett, Dave, may recognize your voice. I think I have this right. Didn't you narrate MLB's World Series?
Yes.
This is one of the great sports narrations, period. Did you do a lot of voiceover?
Yeah, I did a lot of it. But, you know, voiceover, it seems, has gone to the youth. They don't want to hear this voice anymore.
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I think that's a miss.
Well, I do too, obviously, but
and when you did Othello, wasn't that with James Earl Jones?
Yeah, it was.
There's two voices together.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys just make crank calls all night just for the entertainment value?
It was where I had this great, that's where I first tried out what I'm doing here in town, this at a bar on Rush Street. There was a guy who used to play, who was the resident pianist.
Okay.
And every night, to close out his evening, he would play Brubeck's Take Five.
Okay.
Just by himself on the piano. It was absolutely wonderful.
Sure.
And that was his signature kind of thing. And I was at the bar a lot because it was kind of like an open mic.
Sure.
And so while we were doing Othello, can you believe
it? I'm sorry.
This?
No worries. Turn it off. We're good.
I did.
So you're at the bar, and
one night I said to him, I said, would you entertain the idea of maybe doing, you do Take Five.
Sure.
I stand with you and do a speech from Othello.
So essentially it's Shakespeare karaoke.
Yeah. And so he said, yeah, man, yeah, yeah, that sounded really cool. So he started and I started, and everybody went nuts.
Of course they did.
They went, what is that? It's incredible. And I had listened to him play it enough that I kind of knew when...
He had the rhythm, sure.
Going to end with him, you know. And they said, how did you guys do that? And I said, I don't know.
All the rehearsals.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, that sounds like nothing but fun. So this evening of Shakespeare, Broadway and the Bard at Stage 773, you get tickets. I'm going to give you a phone number here. It's 773-327-5252. You can also go to stage773.com, and there's a Broadway and the Bard link right there. You've done everything on stage. Is there something on stage you wish you'd done that you hadn't yet?
Yeah, it was this.
This Broadway doing. And the Bard, this thing
yeah,
you're doing
it
now?
Was, it's really my... It's the history of my life, if you will, in a sense. And I wanted to make some kind of a theater piece out of it. So I was...
But there's a lot to that. You got to figure out how it works for the audience.
Well,
you got to
exactly.
do all those things.
Yeah. And so that's what we did. I knew the soliloquies I wanted to do. I just didn't know what my... It's the basis of it is...
You are a popular guy. I'm telling you right now.
I beg your pardon.
No. It's no problem at all. That's what this... You remember we didn't have those?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Sorry.
It's all right. You know what? Hand that phone to her. She'll take care of it for you. She'll handle it for you. Are you all good?
I turned it off.
All right. So here's my question.
Right.
My question to you is, how does a good kid from Winnipeg get into Shakespeare? Because I'm guessing you and your friends who grew up in Winnipeg, that was probably not one of the go-tos.
No, it wasn't at all. It's really quite interesting. A Hungarian Jew by the name of John Hirsch came to Winnipeg when he was 17 years old, couldn't speak a word of English, was adopted by a family there. By the time he was in his mid-20s, he was teaching English at the University of Manitoba.
Okay.
He had been a puppeteer in Budapest and wondered, because we had the Royal Winnipeg Ballet, why we didn't have a theater.
Sure.
And so he said, I'm going to start a theater. And he was my mentor. He literally took me by the hand and said, okay.
The big brother you didn't know you were going to have.
Yeah, exactly. He said, you're going to do this, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do this. And then he engineered my going to Stratford, Ontario, to the Shakespeare Festival there.
One of the greats in the world.
In the world. And I spent my first summer there and came back home to Winnipeg in the winter to work for John again. And he said, how was it? I said, well, it was extraordinary, and it's what I want to do. And he said, well, you're taking the high road there, you know, doing the classics.
Right,
there ain't a lot of places you can do it in the first place. And I said, well, but that's obviously the challenge to the actor. And so I said, so he said, well, you must make me a promise, though. He said, don't give up the musical, because he said, not many actors can do what you can do, which I didn't realize.
You didn't know what you could do at that point.
No, and I went, oh, really? And he said, no, really. And
did you know you could sing at that age?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was a singer at first.
Okay.
So he said, don't give up the musical.
Sure.
And I said, I won't.
It's great advice. Now, the funny thing is, you know this, because it's the power of television. People stop you in the airport.
Yeah.
They stop you wherever. They know you're from what? Obviously from Blue Bloods.
Right.
But all the years, all the TV you've done.
Yeah. And a lot of in Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote, sure.
I did 9 of those with Angela after we did Sweeney Todd, and she started to do the series.
Well, for younger listeners that may not know, Angela Lansbury, one of the great stage actresses as well.
And still going strong, 91 years old.
Yeah, how about that?
And still can...
I just felt bad because weren't you guys in a little town in Maine, and it seemed like everybody got killed week after week. I don't know why you had such a crime problem.
Yeah, I know.
Was it Cabot's Cove? Was that what it was?
That's what her home was called. But I was an MI6 guy.
Ah, yes.
An Irish guy by the name of Michael Haggerty. And so that was intriguing, but I didn't really want to do the show until they said, well, we're filming it in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm, that's okay.
And I went, oh, okay.
Now that'll work out different. For a little bit.
Yeah. So I went, and we established this kind of quasi-relationship
sure.
that they had. And we did, so I did nine years, 9 years. On Murder, She Wrote.
These story arcs that you walk in as, I think that being a character actor is like being a pinch hitter in baseball. Mm-hmm. You come in cold, and you're expected to get a double off the wall, or you're just expected to hit it because you're not part of the regular rhythm of the cast.
Right.
You're not there every day. I think, to me, I mean, you tell me, you do it, I don't. It seems to me that's tougher than being a regular castmate.
Well, it depends on the writing, of course,
sure.
how it's conceived, and I think that the writers for Murder, She Wrote had this in mind that I was going to be a recurring character,
sure.
as they say in the jargon.
Yeah,
but they never told me that.
Mm-hmm.
But the writing, it seemed to me, was, you know, it was such a personal relationship between the two that you thought.
Of course.
Well, maybe that's what's going to happen.
Are you surprised at how big a deal Blue Bloods is?
No.
You knew when you read it was a hit?
I did. I knew it. I mean, I didn't think it would be 9 years, but...
Well, you and Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg, who,
right.
of course, lives here in the suburbs
right.
quite a bit of the time.
Hopefully he's going to come to the play.
That would be great. I wish you knew a guy who could get him tickets. You got a press opening tonight, and then the 7th
through
the
10th. No, tomorrow night, actually.
Oh, it's tomorrow
night.
Okay.
It's the press night.
And you go through the 10th, and again...
And actually, we're doing a matinee on the 11th.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. It's stage773.com. Follow the links there. Or pick up the phone and call for tickets at 773-327-5252. And I know you don't care, but I just love the fact that you're 6 or 7 years older than Selleck and you're supposedly his dad. I think it's a testament to both of you as actors.
Thank you very much.
It's an honor to meet you. Let's talk hockey for 30 seconds before
okay.
we run out of time. You're a Winnipeg Jets fan.
Yep.
All right. A nice run this year, but it's been a long time since we had a Stanley Cup in Canada.
Yeah, it is.
So were you a hockey fan as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's inevitable. You have to be.
But when you were a kid, you had the Maple Leafs and the Canadians.
No,
and
I was a Canadians.
Oh, you're a Canadians fan. Why them?
Because everybody else in the family was a Toronto Maple Leaf.
You rebel. You future actor, you. And your favorite player as a kid? Do you have anybody that jumps out?
Richard.
Oh, sure.
Beliveau.
Rocket. Yeah.
Jeff Freon. And you know, it was just those guys. That era was and I became really fascinated with the game. My brothers played hockey, not junior, you know,
yeah,
junior
yeah.
hockey.
Yeah.
And so I watched them a lot. And really got to know the game. I played it, obviously, but I wasn't very good at it.
Played it for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, majority, everybody, Dave, you know this because you've covered it for your entire mm-hmm. life. By law in Canada, you have to play hockey.
No,
you'll be arrested and thrown in jail if, in fact, you don't.
Right. What it really reminds me was really extraordinary was that we played outdoors in those days.
Sure. Sure.
And the thing that absolutely stuns me in Winnipeg, Manitoba, is that it's, you know, 40 below zero.
It's unbelievable.
And you're playing hockey on an open, and your parents are standing there watching you.
Right, right. And they also aren't giving you your cell phone, or they're not bringing you hot cocoa.
No, they're just
saying play, get home in time for dinner. Well, it's great to meet you finally after all these
Thank
years.
You.
I couldn't be a bigger fan, and I hope people get a chance to see it. I hope you make an effort to see some of the great stage performances you're ever going to see in Chicago or anywhere else. Broadway at the Bard. Broadway and the Bard, sorry.
Yeah.
At stage773.com. 773-327-5252 for tickets. All the best.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for being in town.
Dave, thank you.
And hi to everybody on CLTV to join us now for the time of the 9 o'clock hour. We'll come back. Going to meet an amazing lady coming up as well. Here's a name you'll remember, and then I'll tell you the rest. Louise Brown. Ring a bell?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? She's here, and she will come and join us live in a few minutes on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Cochran Show.
Cochran Show.
Cochran Show.
the Steve Cochran Show.
9:16, we continue from two locations. Live at 303 East Wacker. That's where Steve Grzanich and Mary Vandeveld are located in our fancy new studios. We'll move over there in a couple of weeks. Dave and I are here in the Tribune Tower trying to make sure that the new landlords don't come in and kick us out too quickly.
Will you get the lights?
Yeah, exactly. Snap them off before you leave. And, Mary, I know you're excited about this. We have an actual legend here in studio. Louise Brown is here. Just days before her 40th birthday, the world's first IVF baby. It is an honor to meet you.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, nice to have you here. From home, which is where?
Bristol in the UK.
And you have two little boys, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Where are they?
They're at home with their dad.
Is that okay?
Yeah, they've got school, so.
Oh, sure, sure. Isn't year-round school, pretty much?
Yeah, they break up July and then have 6 weeks off, and then they go back to the new school year in September.
How old are the boys?
Cameron's 11 and Aiden's 4.
Oh, 11 and 4. Is Cam a good big brother?
Yeah.
Depends on the day?
Yeah.
Dr. Angie Beltzos is here as well. This is big stuff. This is the Midwest Reproductive Symposium's 15th year. Doctor, nice to see you.
It is so nice to be here. We're big fans of
your show. What is the goal in this 15th year? What do you want people to know?
Well, the goal of the Midwest Reproductive Symposium, which is the Chicago Fertility Meeting, is really to promote the knowledge of where we've come over these last 40 years. I mean, Imagine, this field's pretty young, and to propel us to another 40 years to make even more progress.
And the science is where? How good are we at this now?
The science is really every year getting better and better. So on average, when someone does an IVF cycle, they have about a 50% chance, plus or minus, to get pregnant and have a baby. So it's really improved in the U.S. quite a bit.
That's remarkable, because 40 years ago, you, Louise, were number 106. There were 105 attempts prior that sadly didn't work out before you blessed the world with your appearance. And am I right about this? And your little sister also an IVF baby?
Yeah, Natalie was number 40.
How about that?
Amazing.
And now you both have families of your own.
Yeah. My sister has 5 children, and I have 2.
What's the question you get asked most often?
What does it feel like to be the world's first test tube baby?
Mm-hmm. And
my answer is, it's my normal life. I've had it since day one.
It's all you know.
It's all I know, yeah. So it's my normality.
I think about your parents, Leslie and John.
Yes.
Leslie and John, who had tried to have a baby for a long time. And again, this goes back to 1978, when the science wasn't, you know, really anything close to what we have now, obviously. But they desperately wanted to be parents.
Yes, they did.
And you're the miracle that showed up, that began all of the that we now know. I don't know how many thousands, millions of babies that have been born through in vitro fertilization. But all the lives that have changed. The world's been changed by this.
The world has been changed. And we're excited that she's here in Chicago to celebrate this 40th birthday. And we want to invite everyone to, including you, Steve, to send a quick 5-second video clip to her. And if you go to the website, happybirthdaylouisebrown.com, you can have your video live stream tonight while we sing her happy birthday with 40 candles.
How about that? Because these messages are going to cycle over and over and over again. You won't even have to leave the house. You'll just sit there watching people sing to you. Which should be nothing but fun.
It's pretty strange having people all over the world celebrate my 40th birthday with me. It's amazing.
Do you have prospective parents come up to you, you know, emotionally come up to you and talk about what they hope for in their own lives?
Not so much now, but recently, a couple of months ago, we were in my local town doing some shopping, and I heard these footsteps behind me running, and I was like, so I looked around, and it was a lady, and she had a little girl with her, and she went, "Louise." I went, "Yeah." She went, "I just wanted to say thank you, because without you and your parents, I wouldn't have my little girl." And
how about that?
Then her husband came behind her and with a pram, and they had a 4-week-old baby in there as well, which was also IVF. And she hugged me, and she was like, trying not to cry. And I was like, I didn't do anything. And
but that's got to be emotional for you as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Because you're a mom.
Yeah.
You get it.
Yeah.
Because, doctor, that's really the thing, right? It's the combination of hope and science that makes this, you know, so miraculous.
You nailed it. It is so much science, so much great medical care, and the miracle of life. And at Vios Fertility in Chicago here, my clinic and the many clinics around the world, we really are celebrating and in honor of what you just said, making families.
I told you off the air, I've got a niece nine different times through IVF and now has a beautiful little baby girl, and it's
sweetheart.
Just miraculous.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
God bless.
Yeah, because, you know, well, maybe the majority of the population is blessed with the biology to be able to do it on their own. The success, you know, the IVF miracle that happens, well, it all started with you, Louise. I'm sorry. You get credit.
Mum, if Mum was alive today, she would be amazed on how far it's come, the different treatments and everything, and the amount of babies that have been born, and basically the hope and joy that Bob Edwards and Patrick Steptoe have created for millions of people.
Dr. Beltzos, what do you say to families that are, you know, at the beginning of this process?
Don't give up. That would be the one thing.
It's the key.
That's the key. Tenacity. And like many other things in life, just continue to charge forward, because we do have the ability to help people have a family. Just don't walk away before we do it.
You know, we got a mom on the show here and a dad as well that haven't talked yet. I want to get you guys both in here in just a second, right after this break.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Happy birthday, LouiseBrown.com. Go there and sing, dance, and put a little seltzer down your pants as you wish Louise Brown a happy 40th birthday. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore
Show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
Louise will turn 40 in a few days, but she's here for the Midwest Reproductive Symposium. Starts today, goes through the 9th at the Drake. And it's just some great scientific minds, right, doctor, in town?
We have some of the top scientific research that's going to be presented that is really hot off the press, not only in Chicago in the United States, but internationally. We're really excited to have our faculty.
So expect some news to be made, and also it's stuff that she can't even tell us or she'd have to kill us.
Of course.
We'll see that happen.
Classified.
Doctor, I wonder this, from 1978 until now, and we've seen such an explosion in technology, how has that impacted the process?
What it has done, like, for example, being able to freeze eggs, provides a new audience, if you will, for this technology. So, for example, people who are going to receive cancer treatment and become sterile, they can freeze their eggs or freeze their embryos beforehand so that they can have children. And, you know, we've gotten really good at treating cancer, thank God. And these patients really want to have a family after. So that's an example.
You go through med school and you're smart enough to specialize. What got you so interested in this field?
I walked by this door and I was doing my rotation and it said IVF lab. Mm-hmm. And I was like, get out of here. That's amazing. And I said, that's what I want to do right there.
Any regrets?
None.
You
love
changed
it.
A lot of lives yourself.
Yeah. It's really humbling to see some of the families that are created through our work.
You know, Louise, there are families who are listening who have tried and not had the same kind of success that your parents had after all those tries. What do you say to them?
Well, my mum never gave up.
Don't give up.
My mum believed she would have a baby. And I think that helps. Don't give up.
There are people that, and I'm sure you're one of them, there are people that just believe that being a parent is what I need to be. And you're not going to stop until you, you know, have the blessing of that. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, and me.
Yeah.
My two boys are my world there. I mean, it's just...
And you don't know till you know.
No.
Right?
It's just a feeling that you get when they're placed in your arms, and it's just... It's just magical.
It's got to be cool to be the doctor who puts that kind of fun into people's lives, right? Yeah. Mary, say hi.
Hi, good to see you, ladies. Hello. I just had a couple of quick questions. Yeah, I'm over here on the camera.
Yeah, she's at the other building.
I just had a couple of questions. You know, we talk about how wonderful it is to get pregnant and everything, but unfortunately, some people just they can't afford it. Is IVF getting any cheaper?
How about that, Doc?
Well, IVF treatment can be very expensive, and we have the one thing that has starting to change is insurance coverage, and we'll see access to care being changed by legislation. So some companies are mandated to cover fertility treatment. Number two, companies like Google, Facebook, they have signed up for access to care through companies like Progyny. And I think another thing is that there are also other endeavors and businesses that are providing financial loans with easy access to that and credit that allow people to pay slowly over time.
It would be nice to see some of these major technology companies do the things like the Gates Foundation announced yesterday, 52 weeks of maternity or paternity leave doled out to folks that work for them as on an as-needed basis, obviously, but also being able to help fund IVF efforts of their employees.
Yes, and if you do take care of your employees will take care of your customers.
Well, there's also a physical health component to it, right?
I mean, absolutely.
The stress that goes with trying to be a parent and not being able to achieve that is pretty physically debilitating on some level.
Yes, physically. It starts with a physical problem, usually, and just like other parts of our body can break down, whether it be the mind, heart attacks, this reproductive organs can also break down, and it would make sense to cover them. And not only is it physically debilitating, but it is also emotionally debilitating. And we've talked about how depression can also stem from this and needs attention. So at the meeting, we'll be having a whole day on mental health.
I know this is a professional meeting, but can we just have Louise sit out here in the sunshine on Pioneer Court and have people come by and say hi for a few hours?
Yeah, we'll bring her lemonade and
wish her happy birthday.
And wish her happy birthday.
Wish her happy birthday and have so many other parents have an opportunity to come up and say hello, because I know how much it means to them.
Well, we can invite everyone to the Drake at 3:30. We're going to have a little book reading of a book called Not Possible. And she's going to read to children of IVF. So come on down if you want to come and say hey to Louise.
847 texter, so grateful for IVF. It made us parents. Reproductive technology has also given our 7-year-old daughter with cancer someday to have hope of being a parent as well. I'm listening to Louise, and I'm smiling. I have 28-year-old twins, thanks to you and IVF, and thanks to what your parents were willing to do. 936, I was born a week after Louise. I want to wish her a very happy 40th. So grateful for the doctors and scientists who helped create families. I have twin nephews here because of IVF. It's truly a miracle, and that's just a few people who are saying hi. And I know you get it every day, but it's just nice. It's nice to hear.
It is lovely, and it's lovely to come so far from home and have the same messages, that it actually is worldwide.
I can't imagine what it would have been like if we had Twitter and the technology we have now when you were born. What kind of stories did you hear? Obviously, you were too little to remember. Stories did you hear from your parents of TV crews being camped out and all the things they went through from going from a normal family to being globally famous overnight?
It's actually on video, so I've actually seen it for myself when I actually came home, because I was born up in Oldham, because that's where Patrick and Bob did their work, and we travelled about 400 miles back to Bristol where we lived. Now, the video of all the, there was about 100 crews from all over the world outside our little house in Bristol, and just watching the video, it was crazy.
Yeah, because your parents, I mean, new parents, aside from the fact that you just want to be home and celebrate the fact that you've got this little baby and try to figure out how to, you know, do your life now, they had to also deal with that. That's not easy.
No. Mum always said that she felt she had to share me with the world.
Right.
Whereas my younger sister, Natalie, was her baby, because nobody, there wasn't the
interest. Oh, Natalie's here, number 40.
Dave, last word.
Well, do you ever, and you said this is your normal, this is what you've always lived with, but do you ever think of yourself, maybe in a quiet moment, think of yourself as a trailblazer, as a pioneer, even though perhaps it wasn't your decision, you were just happily the product of it?
When I was growing up, about 14, 15, I used to sort of quite often think about it in bed and think that how crazy that when I'm dead and gone, people will remember my name. As I've got older, I'm sort of used to it now, and I don't have time to think about it with the boys and working life. But yeah, I did used to think about it a lot when I was younger, not so much now.
Have you had people come into your life who have tried to exploit your fame, you know, for various reasons?
Not really, no.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, no, first IVF baby t-shirt industry or any of that stuff?
No, nothing like that.
Yeah. And tell me about your life other than raising the boys. What else do you do?
I work full-time for a freight forwarder in Bristol. I've been there since 2005, so I've been there quite a few years now. I do that full-time. I have my husband, Wes. Just have a normal, everyday life, apart from when I'm at IVF things and things like this.
And doing here in Chicago. Who's the good-looking dude you brought in with you?
That is somebody who, that's who looks after all my press.
He helps you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw him at the meeting of the Follically Challenged. Yeah, we were there together.
And Martin and she traveled now to how many continents to share this happy birthday news?
Around the world.
Four continents. We've been to, 2 weeks ago we were in Japan. We've been to Morocco. In a few weeks' time, we're off to Barcelona.
Does your 11-year-old have any sense of why you're so famous?
Yeah, he's starting to understand a bit more now, and he's interested in it. He, if he gets to come along, he will sit and he will listen, which is pretty much how I learnt about most of it when I was growing up, listening to mum and dad.
Doctor, as you said, hope is key, but the Midwest Reproductive Symposium is also key now in its 15th year, because the science you'll share this week over the next few days will help lead more families to be able to be parents.
And propel us forward, yes.
Website you want to send people to?
HappyBirthdayLouiseBrown.com. And when you get on the website, it'll give you instructions to videotape and send your email to us so that we can put it on the website for the world to celebrate, Louise. And I want to thank Martin Powell and Louise Brown for taking time to come for a couple days. So
we got perfect weather for you, Louise. Not that nonsense you're dealing with back home.
Exactly. It's lovely.
And MidwestReproductiveSymposium.com, a website I'd recommend as well. Doctor, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Louise. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Back with the news next on 720 WGN. <9:47. clears throat> That music must mean Rokan is nearby.
Am I?
I just heard you hurt yourself. What'd you do?
You know, I've got weak ankles. I don't know what happened.
I'll tell you, the ladies love guys with weak ankles.
I know how sexy that is. Mm-hmm. Hello, ladies. Mm-hmm. I tend to roll my ankle, and I always like to tell the story that I broke it playing soccer in high school.
But what'd you really do?
I broke it in gym class at high school.
Running from a dodgeball?
Running away from the soccer game.
Kick it to someone else!
Yeah. Oh, no! And I stepped in a hole. And I think the technical term, the medical term now that they use is jacked up. It's been jacked up for,
which ankle, left or right?
Right, right.
Well, we could be a great pair. I broke my left ankle three times, twice playing basketball and once running when a kid, yes, I used to run, when a kid thought it'd be hilarious to kind of swerve his car towards me as I was running, and I kind of, half leaped off the road and landed in like a mini pothole. snapped my ankle there.
Oh, God.
Good
times.
So worse.
And people who have the weak ankles. The weak ankles. I mean, everybody, we're our own fraternity. Mm-hmm. And I went to get it rehabbed twice, and it really works when they do that. I mean, because the doctors are like, you don't want to do surgery. You want to, go to athletic or whatever. And I did. And for 3 years it lasts, and I'm on the exact 3 year mark right now. And I slept in a hole playing golf yesterday because there was a White Sox game on, so I figured I could go. I saw you in the morning. I was working really hard, wasn't I, Steve? Yesterday,
you were. I saw you do that taped interview right before you left.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm out there, and I'm, and the worst thing is I was by myself. I just went out and wanted to play a couple holes by myself.
It's great therapy. Playing golf by yourself is great therapy.
Do you find yourself talking to yourself the way
you're
doing?
Sure. I'm cursing at myself. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's not going to work. But it's all kind of negative stuff. It's
yes.
Like you're getting all your negative thoughts out. And so I'm walking. I jack. I'm by myself, and I had a bad shot. I jack a shot over the green. I'm walking on the other side. I stepped into a sprinkler hole, and then I went down. And
it's another one of the deadly golf injuries, which makes golf the most dangerous sport on earth.
People don't get that. They don't understand the kind of peril we're under. So a guy comes up, sees me from like two holes over, go down. This just tells you about the kind of places I play golf. Guy drives up to me and he goes, "You okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm okay." He goes, "Wait, did you step funny? What happened?" And I said, "Yeah, I rolled my ankle in this hole." He goes, that's good, because I thought you got shot.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like,
wow.
Oh, okay. And then he drives off. And I'm like, that you can't move real fast. And I'm like, okay, I got to get in the car. I got to go.
Yeah, definitely. That's not great. That's not. If it makes you feel any better, yesterday on two separate occasions, I was reminded that I'm old. At one point, one guy said, "Haven't you retired yet?" And then, but told me what a fan of the show he was. And then last night, speaking of golf, I live near the golf course that I play regularly, and I walked over to the driving range, hit a few balls, and started to walk back. It's like a mile each way. And as I'm walking back across the golf course, the assistant pro comes screaming up with a golf cart like near me and goes, "Hey, man, you okay? You need a ride?"
My God.
No, what I'm doing here is walking.
What was your body language like, though?
I must have been limping like a wounded Civil War soldier. I don't know what happened. Hey, we just had Louise Brown in. Amazing story, right? I mean, the first test tube baby, the first IVF baby on the planet. How about that?
That is amazing. How old is she now?
She's 40. She's about to turn 40.
Wow.
And your good friend Ron Majors has a little brother named Paul Majors, who was a big TV star in Minneapolis and L.A., and just recently retired from the news as well. I was good friends with Paul during the Minneapolis years, and I remember vividly he and his wife trying to have a baby, and they were going through the IVF process in the early 90s. They conceived naturally and then found out they were having an IVF baby, I believe, 3 days apart. So these miracles happen on their own schedules.
I've known Paul for a long time. I didn't even know that story. So she had two.
Yeah, they had tried for a long time.
In utero babies?
I don't know how many babies she had naturally, but she had an IVF baby around the same time. Like days apart. I mean, the conception was days apart.
Oh my gosh.
The success. I see what happens when a man and a woman love each other very much, Ro.
I'm still trying to do the math on this.
There are boy parts and girl parts.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. Is there kissing involved or not?
I hope not. That's how you get things. what are you doing on show today?
I'm just looking that up right now, Steve, so I need you to just cover for me for just a second. look over there. Oh, my gosh. What's that all about?
Don't look at the pictures. It'll throw it all off.
Yeah. We have a big show, and a live show, which is important. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the Sox had the big doubleheader yesterday, and that was,
right.
That's all that really counts. Mm-hmm. And today we return to the air with greatness. And I really feel badly because I believe we have Brett Baer in studio with us today.
Oh, is that right?
He's in for
Brett Baer and Shep Smith, the only two people on Fox who haven't lost their mind. I like both of them.
Yeah, and we also we have there's a couple of other interesting
things are happening in the news. I don't know if you've noticed them today, Steve.
Which ones are we speaking
of? They're preparing for a raft of pardons. Did you see this story?
I literally saw the phrase this morning, Donald Trump has gone pardon crazy. This isn't an MTV show.
Pardon crazy.
Is that what you're speaking of, the pardon crazy president?
Pardon crazy. It's a pardon party. That would be an MTV show.
Right, with the music in the background.
Or the pardon house, where everybody comes and has to live with them in a house for a week, and then he decides whether he's going to pardon them or not.
I think you just conceptualize the next big reality hit.
I think it could work.
Now, what was the other story?
Well, I do. Well, that's the story. Well, then, obviously, all the, you know, the, as they're getting ready for the G7, will he actually go to that, or is he just going to go to North Korea? You know, it's within a week now that he's going to be sitting down with Little Rocket Man.
Well, do you know the Rodman piece of this?
Is he going? Because
Dennis Rodman, reported last night by multiple news outlets, and I haven't seen it confirmed today, but it certainly was confirmed last night. Dennis Rodman, coincidentally, will be in Singapore next week during the summit. Who's the guy that hung out with Kim Jong-un? Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, he's the one guy who they have in common.
Yeah, because he was on The Apprentice. And if there's one person that could make me more nervous than Donald Trump talking about nuclear war, it's Dennis Rodman.
Guess what? When he gets drunk, he always says that. That's his drunk phrase. Guess what?
It's not good.
Guess what?
It's not good. All right, buddy. We'll see you later.
All right.
That's Ro Khan and his one good ankle. All right. Just a quick point to make post Louise Brown, and that is I'm adopted. I fully support adoption, and adoption is a wonderful option. We didn't have time to get into that in relation to the Louise Brown conversation, but a couple of texters were confused. Adoption's a wonderful thing. You know, I wouldn't be sitting here with you, Dave, without it. So
right.
Could be a positive or negative for you. We're back with Bill and Wendy next. 10 o'clock, Bill and Wendy are here. So why did you upset David Kaplan?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've upset David Kaplan in the past, Steve. That's
no, but I mean
new.
This time.
But I upset you, and that's the part that bothers
me.
No,
you didn't upset me.
I just wanted to set you straight.
You texted me to say that you were disappointed.
Awful. Well, so what happened?
I was saying yesterday that I can't believe Jake Arrieta.
I heard a lot of your show yesterday.
Did you? Well, thanks.
Jake Arrieta didn't start. You thought he was starting.
I thought he was coming to town and starting the game yesterday. And I said, I can't believe it's not getting more fanfare that one of the Cubs' greatest pitchers is coming back to Wrigley and pitching. And and I upset, I embarrassed Dave. And no, I upset
because Dave wasn't pitching?
Well, no. Well, partially, yes.
But I texted. But I couldn't text because I was driving, so I was voice texting. So I sent Bill a text saying Jake Arrieta is not pitching in this series, and it kept coming out. Jake Arrieta is not pitching in this series.
Oh.
So I had to keep redoing it.
Though I have to say that Bill's smart enough to have figured that part out.
I would have figured it out. But by that point,
yeah, but then Bill said, yeah, I guess he's not starting tonight. He pitched last night. Yeah. And he didn't.
I said, but he's got, I thought he had a job at Carson's. I mentioned that. And that was wrong. And then I said,
so why was
a turtle? And I know he's not married. I was just talking.
Not at all.
I just kept saying things, hoping to get something right.
Why was Dave Kaplan upset about this?
Because he's a walk of famer, and he expects more from this place than having a guy come on and just say things that are fake.
So basically, you will never make the Walk of Fame now, and we may leave the building.
That's what it looks like, Steve, yeah.
That's the ramifications of what you did yesterday.
I like when you're wrong, honestly.
But I wasn't just wrong.
Spoken like a show wife. Yeah. I love when you're wrong.
I embarrassed my country is what I did.
Honestly, I've told you this. I've been a friend of yours for how long? 20
Almost
plus years?
20, yeah, plus
yeah,
20
you've
years.
Been a disappointment to me the entire time.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's nice.
No problem. See you tomorrow.